Proverbs chapter 6. I think one of the ways to study the Bible is to keep asking yourself questions as you read, to be curious. And one of the things that strikes me, being a curious kind of bloke, really, reading Proverbs, is that Solomon seems to have some obsession about don't be surety for others. It's in Proverbs 6, 11, 17, 20, 22, 27. He keeps going on about it, and particularly here in Proverbs 6, he talks about it like it's some major sin to be collateral for your neighbour. In other words, if your neighbour is poor and he needs to borrow money and he's got nothing, well, you say, well, all right, if this guy doesn't repay it, well, the debtor can take my donkey or my ox or whatever. Now, in hand-to-mouth societies, this kind of thing is absolutely common. You see it in hand-to-mouth societies today, both in urban areas and in rural areas, in the West, in the poorer world. It's all the same. People living a hand-to-mouth existence sometimes do need to borrow something. They need to borrow cash, or they need to borrow something. You think of that poor member of the Sons of the Prophets who borrowed an axe head and it flew off and landed in the river, and he was really desolated that I borrowed it. This is quite common, and so how do you borrow something if you've got no collateral to put down? Well, you ask your mate if he could stand something for you. The Law of Moses recognized that this was going to happen, and there is legislation about it in Exodus 22. And that legislation is really geared to ensure that the debtor is not abused by the person who's lent him something, and that the whole situation is not abused. And the legislation is really to defend the poor against the rich in such a case when something goes wrong and the debt can't be repaid. So God accepted that that was going to happen. But Solomon appears to me quite out of step with this. He forbids it in the strongest possible language. He says in verse 2, if you do this, you're trapped by the words of your mouth. You're ensnared with the words of your mouth. Now, Proverbs 5:22 uses just that language about being snared by major immorality. If you get involved with prostitutes, you will be snared. You will be caught up and trapped. And yet he uses the same language about it if you are collateral for your mate to borrow something when he's in a real hard place. Well, I think that Solomon is simply out of step with the spirit of the Law of Moses on this. And why does he keep on and on about it? Well, again, as I said at the beginning, one way of doing Bible study is to keep on asking yourself questions. I must have read 1 Samuel 17, the story of David and Goliath, countless times to my children and other young folks, as well as studying it over the years for myself. And you know how it is when you read a story to kids in the Bible. You don't read necessarily every verse, you give them the general picture. But as I say, being a curious kind of bloke, I noticed 1 Samuel 17, verse 18, where Jesse says to David, go and see your brothers and take that pledge from them. Take that collateral. It's the same Hebrew word, collateral. And you look at the different translations, and they're all wildly guessing at what it means, because it just seems an odd thing to say that there's some deal about collateral. And it's the same Hebrew word. And here's what I think. And I may be wrong, but it is what I think. As the curious bloke who asks questions of the text, I think that there had been a problem in the family of Jesse and David relating to something to do with collateral. We don't know the details, but it was obviously a big item. And as I say, you might skim over that when you're reading the story of David and Goliath to your children, but it's there. And as I say, being curious, I have fiddled with that a little bit and try to see what that refers to, and I can't see what it refers to until I connected it with my, again, my curious observation that Solomon has this strange obsession against collateral and being collateral for your neighbor. It's as if something really big had gone wrong in his family of origin, that is, in his father, David's family, when David was a fairly young guy, and maybe there'd been some issue over collateral. Which would indicate to me, as very often in the Proverbs, that whilst what Solomon says on one level is true, on another level, I think he is expressing his own personal hang-ups and obsessions on some points, and ever seeking to justify his father David. Now, I've talked about this often in talking about the Proverbs, that it's true on one level, but there is a subtext of justification of the family of David, which, of course, Solomon was from. And I wondered if there was some big argument about collateral that, I don't know, maybe the family had put down their family property as collateral for some loan and it didn't get paid, and technically their property didn't belong to them, it belonged to someone else. Could have even belonged to the house of Saul, who knows, they lived just on the border with Benjamin. I don't know, but I just wonder. So there you are, I just put that little thing to you. But more to the point, Solomon keeps on about being generous to your neighbour, being a good neighbour, etc. And he says that you've got to be generous to your poor neighbour, and you've got to be a brother in adversity to your neighbour. He says that several times. Well, being a brother to your neighbour when he's in hard times, yeah, that includes things like giving him something or promising something as collateral when he needs to borrow some money or needs to borrow something, be it an axe head or a donkey or whatever, because he's really in a dead end, he's really in a hard place. That is what loving your neighbour involved, and it's what it involves today in hand-to-mouth societies. That's what it involves. And Solomon is saying, oh, don't do that. Be very careful. Do not do that. Don't be collateral. Well, as I say, I just think that he is out of step with the law of Moses and with the whole spirit of loving your neighbour and being a good friend to your neighbour in adversity. Now, he goes on in verse 3 and says, now, my son, if you've done this, and if you're in the hand of your neighbour, humble yourself and get out of it, change it. Well, no. If you have already promised to be collateral for the debt of your neighbour, well, you can't get out of it by its nature. So he's really advocating certainly unethical behaviour here. And he says, humble yourself and do this. Look, I'm telling you the truth. If you don't agree with me, like I'm not agreeing with him, I suppose he'd say to me, Duncan, no, humble yourself. You're arrogant. You don't agree with me. He says, give no sleep to your eyes, nor slumber to your eyelids. Get out of it. Humble yourself. Get out of it. No, it would be unethical to get out of it if you've promised your donkey as a collateral for your neighbour who's borrowing, I don't know, someone else's donkey to get his harvest in or whatever it might be. So often Solomon comes over as saying, look, I'm right when I'm saying is right, and if you don't agree with me, then you're not humble. And that is, as I say, just looking and thinking beneath the surface, this is not right. As I have said, there is nothing wrong per se with being collateral. The law of Moses accepts this will happen and seeks to regulate it, but does not outlaw it in the way that Solomon does. Now, both David and Hezekiah ask God to be collateral for their various debts. They ask God to be their collateral. He uses this word, Psalm 119, verse 122, and Hezekiah in Isaiah 38, 14. So the idea of being collateral is not completely immoral nor unethical, because that is, in effect, what God does for us. We get ourselves in stupid situations. And basically, God's covenant love for us, his faithfulness to the covenant to save us, his grace, is in fact the collateral. That is what underpins you. Okay, you in debt to this person or that person whom you have sinned against, and in the end, God will stand collateral for you. That is the idea. So what should you do to your neighbor? You should also, in those hand-to-mouth situations, reflect that grace in their context by doing the same thing. But Solomon says, oh no, don't do that. Another usage of the term is in the New Testament, several times, where we're told that God gives the Holy Spirit in our hearts as collateral. The King James Version uses the word earnest, a guarantee that he's going to pay. Now, that's a very strange idea, that God should, as it were, be in debt to us, but he's given us a guarantee, a collateral, that, look, I'm going to do it. And I think what that means is that our experience of the Holy Spirit in our hearts, the love of God, Romans 5, is shed abroad in our hearts by the Holy Spirit which is given unto us. Ephesians 3, we are strengthened by his Spirit, by his might in the inner man. And this is the guarantee. If you want to check it out, 2 Corinthians 1:22, 5:5, Ephesians 1:14. God is going to save us, but he realizes he hasn't done that yet, but he gives us this collateral, as if to say, well, you know, by my activity in your life, in your heart, that sense of his presence, which is up to us if we accept, but we are given it and asked to accept it and experience it, if you let yourself experience it, that is the guarantee that he's going to come through. That after you're dead, if you die before the Lord comes, you will be resurrected by his Spirit, by that same Spirit that is now in us, as Paul argues in Romans. That is the same Spirit which will resurrect the body and give us the life eternal. And Jeremiah 30, verse 21, we are to give our hearts as a pledge to him. It's mutual. Now, of course, we got huge debts that, you know, no honest man can pay. We have sinned grievously, and the wages of sin is death, and that is it. And yet we can give our hearts as a collateral that we will pay. And you get the same imagery in the Lord's parables about the two debtors, that they both say, I will pay you, but I can't pay you now, but I promise I will pay you. But they were in jail. They had no collateral to offer. And of course, their Lord frankly forgave them. But they said, I will pay you. Well, what could they give as guarantee? Well, nothing. But before God, we have a debt to him that we cannot ever repay. But we can give our hearts to him. Totally devote them to him. Not that we are sinless in our hearts or whatever, but that we give our hearts to him as a collateral. Now, you know, you can explore these ideas further, and if you look at the NEV commentary on Proverbs 6, you'll have these verses there in front of you to think about. I put it to you to just chew over in your mind, and I therefore think that our response to others should be a reflection of how God has dealt with us. Now, I'm not arguing that we should therefore be literally collateral for other people's debts necessarily. Not so, necessarily. It's a case of wisdom when it comes to being collateral for other people's debts in our context. But look at it this way. People have debts, and the figure of being in debt is used about sin, especially sin against another person. People are indebted to us, and we are indebted to others. And what's the collateral? What's the guarantee? We have debts that we can't pay, and they have debts to us, maybe, that they can't pay and won't pay, especially if they're impenitent. But the collateral in all that is provided by us giving our hearts. And God has also pledged to save us by grace. And he's given us the guarantee, the collateral, the earnest of the possession, as the King James says.